if you would, you can turn to the last chapter of 1 Samuel. The last chapter of 1 Samuel, chapter 31. We have been going through really the history, the biblical history of Israel. You can see a new splash screen here. And as I, you know, this kind of is kind of evolved a little bit, you know, like which, as we're going through the whole counsel of God, which books we were preaching on, and we're going to do Joshua, Judges, and Ruth. And so that's where we just did Joshua, Judges, Ruth. Well, then we were praying about and talking about, Steve and I, about where we're going to go next. And it just kind of made sense that if we did Joshua, Judges, and Ruth, we would just go to 1 Samuel. I wasn't necessarily thinking of the fact that once I got into 1 Samuel, that was going to lead on a path that was going to continue into 2 Samuel and then eventually into 1 Kings and 2 Kings. And it's going to encompass 1 Chronicles and 2 Chronicles. And I was just joking in Sunday school about, you know, thinking about and praying about what we're going to do next. But you know that once we get done with 2 Kings, it just makes sense that we go where? To Ezra and Nehemiah, because that's the ending of that biblical history. And so the new splash screen, the biblical history of Israel. I mean, that's just what we've been dealing with. And as we've gone through it, we've talked about Abraham from the book of Genesis and Moses from Exodus and through the wilderness and then into Joshua, Judges, Ruth. Right now we're into the kings, the transition. From the judges into the kings, we saw from Samuel to Saul, and now we're finishing up this transition from the king of the world, Saul, because we want to have a king and be like all the nations, so God gave it to him, to the king that was going to be chosen by God, a man who was after God's own heart. And so today we're going to be looking at the death of Saul and that the final step in that transition, if you would, because as we go into the next 2 weeks, I believe next week Chuck is speaking, and it's going to be on David being selected as king over Judah, and then 2 weeks from now, Steve will be speaking, and it'll be over the time when then it transitions to David becoming the king over all of Israel, okay? And so over these next 3 weeks, we're there. So today is really the end of Saul, but this is, we took a step back last week by looking at the genealogies in 1 Chronicles 1 through 9 as the foundation coming into this, because 1 Chronicles chapter 10, which we probably won't read through as we go through this, but we're going to look at a verse or two, because 1 Chronicles 10 really parallels what's going to go on here in 1 Samuel 31. And then we have 2 Samuel chapter 1, which begins with that the whole event as well. And as we consider this time, it's very important because there is some lessons to be learned here in the demise of Saul. And again, as I shared in Sunday school, you know, with Moses sharing the song at the end of Deuteronomy, it's not a happy song, you know? I mean, he starts off with praise to God, but instantly he goes to what's going to happen to Israel in the days ahead when they reject him, you know? And I kind of chuckled about it. We don't sing songs like that. We don't sing jealousy, worship is jealousy. You know, we don't want to worship or sing songs about what happens to us when we walk away from God. But God is continually reminding his people of what those consequences are. And we're told in the New Testament that the things that were written before were written for our learning. Okay, so there's a reason for this stuff to be in there. And some of the stuff we don't want to read, oh, it's a little gory or this or that. But it's something that we need to pay attention to, because God is the same, Jesus is the same, yesterday, today, and forever. He's the same. And so just as he looked at sin back in the days of Saul, so he looks at sin today. It's no difference. And so we want to look at the death of Saul. And the first thing we want to look at is the events of his death. And so if you're there at 1 Samuel 31, let's read through this, and let's look at some of these events that are going on. And we're going to start with the defeat of Israel. It says, now the Philistines fought against Israel, and the men of Israel fled from before the Philistines and fell slain on Mount Gilboa. Then the Philistines followed hard after Saul and his sons, and the Philistines killed Jonathan, Abinadab, and Malchishua, Saul's sons. The battle became fierce against Saul. The archers hit him, and he was severely wounded by the archers. Then Saul said to his armor-bearer, draw your sword and thrust me through with it, lest these uncircumcised men come and thrust me through and abuse me. But his armor bearer would not, for he was greatly afraid. Therefore Saul took a sword and fell on it. And when his armor bearer saw that Saul was dead, he also fell on the sword and died with him. So Saul and his three sons, his armor bearer, and all his men died together that same day. And when the men of Israel who were on the other side of the valley and those who were on the other side of the Jordan saw that the men of Israel had fled and that Saul and his sons were dead, they forsook the cities and fled. And the Philistines came and dwelt in them. So it happened the next day when the Philistines came to strip the slain that they found Saul and his three sons fallen on Mount Gilboa. And they cut off his head and stripped off his armor and sent word throughout the land of the Philistines to proclaim it in the temple of their idols and among the people. Then they put his armor in the temple of the Asherahs, and they fastened his body to the wall of Bethshean. Now when the inhabitants of Jabesh-Gilead heard what the Philistines had done to Saul, all the valiant men arose and traveled all night and took the body of Saul and the bodies of his sons from the wall of Bethshean and came to Jabesh and burned them there. Then they took their bones and buried them under the tamarisk tree at Jabesh and fasted 7 days. Continue, because this is a continuation into, I don't believe 1 and 2 Samuel were actually divided at that point. Now it came to pass after the death of Saul, when David returned from the slaughter of the Amalekites, and David had stayed 2 days at Ziklag, on the third day, behold, it happened that a man came from Saul's camp with his clothes torn and dust on his head. So it was, when he came to David, that he fell to the ground and prostrated himself. And David said to him, "Where have you come from?" So he said to him, "I have escaped from the camp of Israel." Then David said to him, "How did the matter go? Please tell me." And he answered, "The people have fled from the battle. Many of the people are fallen and dead. And Saul and Jonathan his son are dead also." So David said to the young man who told him, "How do you know that Saul and Jonathan his son are dead?" Then the young man who told him said, "As I happened by chance to be on Mount Gilboa, there was Saul leaning on his spear, and indeed the chariots and the horsemen followed hard after him. Now when he looked behind him, he saw me and called to me, and I answered, 'Here am I.' And he said to me, 'Who are you?' So I answered him, 'I am an Amalekite.' He said to me again, 'Please stand over me and kill me, for anguish has come upon me, but my life still remains in me.' So I stood over him and killed him, because I was sure that he could not live after he had fallen. And I took the crown that was on his head and the bracelet that was on his arm and have brought them here to my lord." Therefore David took hold of his own clothes and tore them, and so did all the men who were with him. And they mourned and wept and fasted until evening for Saul and for Jonathan his son, for the people of Yahweh and for the house of Israel, because they had fallen by the sword. Then David said to the young man who told him, "Where are you from?" And he answered, "I am the son of an alien, an Amalekite." So David said to him, "How was it that you were not afraid to put forth your hand to destroy Yahweh's anointed?" Then David called to one of the young men and said, "Go near and execute him." And he struck him so that he died. So David said to him, "Your blood is on your own head, for your own mouth has testified against you, saying, 'I have killed Yahweh's anointed.'" Then David lamented with this lamentation over Saul and over Jonathan his son. And he told them to teach the children of Judah the song of the bow. Indeed, it is written in the book of Jasher. And we'll end that there, and you can read the song on your own. So what do we see in the events of Saul's death? First of all, we see the defeat of Israel. It wasn't pretty. There was a battle. The Philistines were raised up, okay? And we're going to see about the effects of it. But the reality is that as those who are called by God's name and are supposed to be leaders of his people, as they walk away from the Lord in disobedience, what begins to happen? The enemy grows stronger. And there's a lack of respect for the power of God. And so the Philistines rose up. And just as we saw 2 weeks ago, when Saul had gone to the witch of Endor and to call up Samuel, Samuel said, "By this day tomorrow, you'll be with me, you'll be dead." And so the word of the Lord through Samuel, even after he was dead, came true. And so we have the defeat of Israel. Well, we then have the bravery of the men of Jabesh-Gilead. See, because when Saul dies, and we're going to come back to that in a moment, okay? Saul dies, and then they chop off his head, and we'll come back to that in a moment. And they take his body and they hang it on the walls of Bethshean. And there's this group of valiant men, honorable men, who realize that this is a dishonoring thing. I think, and again, it's not necessarily there stated this way, I don't think it's a dishonor for Saul. It's a dishonor to Israel, which is a dishonor to God. And it's a mockery of God. And so these men, these valiant men, these brave men of Jabesh-Gilead, they go to Bethshean. Now, I want you to think about this. This is a huge thing. Where are they going? The enemy territory. I mean, right to the wall where they've hung it out. And they're going to take it down. Do you think that they might have had a guard over those? Okay? So this is a big, we just kind of read, it's a byline. In the men of, some valiant men of Jabesh-Gilead, they went and they took down and they buried it. This is a big deal. They made the decision to risk their lives for the honor of God. There's a contrast that's happening here between those who walked away from God and those who want to honor God. So we have this bravery of the men of Jabesh-Gilead. We have the testimony of the Amalekite. There in 2 Samuel chapter 1. What an interesting thing. I can imagine there's a debate on how did Saul die. He was injured by the archers. He realized that he was dying. He was mortally wounded. He couldn't get away. So he asked his armor bearer to kill him. His armor bearer says, I can't do that. I don't want that on me. And so then Saul does what? He falls on the sword himself. He goes to kill himself, okay? So the armor bearer sees that. He falls on his own sword, kills himself. Now the debate rages. It begins. Did he actually die, or did he just more mortally wound himself? Because we have the testimony from the Amalekite, right, who says that I just happened by, and he was what? Mortally wounded, and so he asked me to finish him off. Did he or didn't he? In the end, it doesn't matter. I think it's the intent of the Amalekite here that we have to see. What did he do? Let's say he killed him. Let's say he didn't kill him. It doesn't really matter, right? What did he do next? Took the king's belongings, and then he what? Flies to David. Why do you think he goes to David? You think David would be happy about it? Keep going. So let's assume David's a pickle. Anyways, let's assume David is happy about it. He's going for a reward. He's going for the reward. And I brought you his bracelet and his crown. He hasn't been in touch with the heart of David. All along, David has said what? You don't touch the Lord's anointed. Did David had a chance to kill Saul? Had a couple chances, didn't he? And he says, no. And he wouldn't let his own guys touch the Lord's anointed. He knew that at God's time, God would deal with it. But by the testimony of the Amalekite, he did what? He killed Saul. I could extrapolate on this, but I don't want to go there. Okay, you let your mind think about that for a moment, the word that could go on. We read in Deuteronomy that God is the one who kills and God is the one who makes alive. That's his job. Does that make sense? It's not the job for man to do. Now, when is it man's job? Well, David then does what? He has the Amalekite what? Killed, but the term used is execute. What's the difference between the Amalekite and Saul and David and the Amalekite? Justice. That's exactly right. Justice. And so you think through our day and age, you can see where applications come in that, okay? I don't need to preach on those. You just think that one through, okay? And that's a hard thing that we live in today with some of the social decisions that are being made in our court systems, okay? But in God's eyes, in the eyes of true justice, there is a difference. Okay? So I'm going to leave that one there. And so this Amalekite then gives testimony, okay? And there are times, I mean, I think, you know, again, I like to place myself in each one of these characters, okay? Because there's no temptations overtaking you but such as what? Common to man. And so there's a part of me that's common to each one of these. You know, I am Saul, I am David, I am the Amalekite. You know, I mean, there's part of me that's in there, and I could see all that. And so that's how we knew what the Amalekite wanted, right? Because the sin of man is in every one of us. We get it, okay? And hopefully we have the Spirit living in us to have the self-control that we don't indulge the gratification of the flesh. Does it make sense? It should be about the glorification of God and not the gratification of me. And so the Amalekite was all about what? The gratification of me, not the glorification of God. But he ran into a guy who was all about what? The glorification of God. And so we have this testimony of the Amalekite, and then finally we have the lamentation of David. This speaks huge to me. I mean, David is told that the man who has been pursuing him, that is the cause of him going into the land of the enemy, has been killed. And he didn't what? Yeah! God's finally done it. Oh, I'm free. I can go back. This is exciting. His first reaction is what? Sorrow. Justice to be done to the man who claims to have been the perpetrator. And then lamentation over the life of Saul. Romans 12:15 says, rejoice with those who rejoice and weep with those who weep. Proverbs 24:17-18 says, do not rejoice when your enemy falls, and do not let your heart be glad when he stumbles. Why? Anybody know? Lest Yahweh see it, and it displease him, and he turn away his wrath from him. Meaning what? And he places it on you. We're instructed in God's word over and over and over again. Jesus said, you've heard it said, love your what? No. Love your neighbor. That's right. Okay? And curse your enemy, right? But I say unto you, pray for your enemy and love your enemy and pray for those who despitefully use you. Turn it totally on the head. You know, it's not a matter of rejoicing over the calamity of our enemies. Isn't that awful? I mean, honestly, I mean, in our day and age today, we're looking politically and all this kind of stuff. We would love to see what? The calamity of our enemies, wouldn't we? But there's a difference between being excited about a turn of events and excited at the calamity of people. We should never be excited about when there's a calamity upon a person. Does that make sense? There's a balance in there. I understand it. And what a struggle, okay? But it is true that it doesn't matter who it is. Ultimately, even if it's, and I won't say a name, okay, whoever you can picture as the worst enemy of the church, what ultimately should be my greatest desire for that individual? For them to be saved. I want them to come to know Christ. And so I should be praying for salvation, not praying for damnation. But so many times we what? We'd rather have damnation. Saul was all about, David was all about this lamentation. And then as you read through that song, which I didn't read, he gives praise to Saul. He eulogizes the good things of Saul. He doesn't bring out all the uckiness. There's no reason to do that. The mind of Christ is different than the mind of man. Now, those are the events that enter. But what I really want to look at here is the effects of his death, because this is huge. What was the cause of Saul's death? The cause of Saul's death. Turn to 1 Chronicles chapter 10. So we can look at the parallel of this in 1 Chronicles. And we're going to pick it up verse 11 because it's the same. But we'll pick it up there in verse 11 because that's where the men of Jabesh Gilead, okay? So you can kind of see that the parallelism of it. Verse 11, 1 Chronicles 10, verse 11. And when all Jabesh-Gilead heard that the Philistines had done to Saul, all the valiant men rose and took the body of Saul and the bodies of his sons, and they brought them to Jabesh and buried their bones under the Tamesh tree at Jabesh and fasted for 7 days. So Saul died for his unfaithfulness, which he had committed against Yahweh, because he did not keep the word of Yahweh, and also because he consulted a medium for guidance. But he did not inquire of Yahweh. Therefore, he killed him and turned the kingdom over to David, the son of Jesse. What was the cause of Saul's death? It wasn't an arrow wound. It wasn't a sword wound. It wasn't the loss of blood. I mean, that's what we would put down. Cause of death. You know, heart stoppage, whatever. I'm not a medical person to prove it. You know, anyways. So, lack of oxygen to the brain, whatever. It wasn't any of that, loss of blood, you know. I mean, the cause of death? Unfaithfulness to God. Unfaithfulness to God. You know, 1 Corinthians chapter 11, when it's talking about communion, says that some are eating and drinking of the body and blood of the Lord unworthily. And therefore, many are sick, and some are even dying. Do we believe that? Again, through Moses, God declares that he's the one who kills, and he's the one who makes alive. He's the one who wounds, and he's the one who heals. Do we believe that God not only gives us life, but God can take it away as well? Do we really believe that the wages of sin is death? Do we believe that? Or do we say, oh, no, that's just spiritual. That's eternal, you know, separation from God. And I teach that as well. But sometimes I think we miss out on the day that you eat of it, you will surely die. And God is just in the execution of those who willfully, continually disobey his law. Repeat offenders. What do you think about repeat offenders in today's day? You know, we read in the newspaper about people getting arrested and then they're repeat offenders, and we think, what? Why were they out? Why didn't we do something with these people? Why didn't we have capital punishment? This guy's out and he's just killed somebody, and he's killed somebody in the past, or he raped somebody or whatever. Why is he walking the streets? Why haven't we done something with it? Would you want God to do justice over you the same way? You break his law. How often do you break it? If you were really angelic, you were really a good person, maybe once a day, three times a day, sins, you know, sins of omission, sins of commission, right? So God says he wants you to pray what? All the time, continually. And he wants you to pray with thanksgiving, okay? So when you don't pray with thanksgiving, when you're a little bit of murmuring and all that kind of stuff, what would you call that? Just not doing things right. Yeah. What would you call it? Sin. Sin is any time I think, say, or do something that displeases God. When I am in disobedience to God, when I am in rebellion to God, it's sin. It's what it is. And so if I only sin three times a day, that'd be 1,000 times a year. That's a pretty big rap sheet, isn't it? And if I live 70 years, that's 70,000 times. Could you imagine going before the judge with a rap sheet that's 70,000 offenses long? But okay, you're really good. It's only once a day. Or maybe none a day, but you have a bad time during the week and you'd make it up for it in one day. Anyways, whatever it is, you know, so maybe. So it's only 30,000 long. That's what I thought. I mean, I know I got annals. There's volumes with Bob's name on it in heaven. I'm not proud of that. But I recognize the grace of God in all that. It's by God's grace that I don't get what I deserve. But there are times when we know from 1 Corinthians chapter 5, when his children walk in public volitional disobedience. And he tells the church in 1 Corinthians 5, to hand him over to Satan, so his flesh will be destroyed, but his soul will be saved. I don't lose my salvation, But there's a point in time, Hebrews chapter 12, if I don't respond to the chastisement of the Lord, that ultimately he's going to do what? He's going to take me out. It's justice. And so God is the one, we're told here, God is the one who killed Saul. The cause of death? Unfaithfulness to God. Capital punishment. Now we see that coming through a chain of events, and had that not been stated there, we could just say what? He died in battle. He died in war. And the Philistines could take all the what? Credit for it. But the fact is that God had determined justice upon him for his unfaithfulness. Unfaithfulness for what? What does it specifically say? Because he did not keep the word of Yahweh. So I ask myself, I mean, this isn't just you. You got to understand that if I preach hard sometimes, it's because I've been beaten up hard, okay, by God on this. You know? I mean, this is real stuff. What if I'm Saul? Am I Saul? Do I deserve? There are times in my life I know that God has set me on the shelf or that God has done things. And he's punished me. He's chastened me. I don't have to share all those things with you, okay? But I know when it happened. And the book of Hebrews says that's an act of what? It's an act of love. Because if you're walking in sin and he doesn't chasten you, then what? You're not his. Isn't that interesting? So, the cause of Saul's death. But look at these consequences of his death. Back there in the book, in beginning of chapter 10, and then also back in 1 Samuel 31, the first thing that happens is you have the demoralization of the people of God. They saw their leader die. They saw their leader fall. And they then what? They fled. They were scattered. The scattering, the demoralization of the people. They were disheartened. I remember Jimmy Swaggart falling. I remember Jimmy Baker falling. What happened? Do you remember? That was years ago now. But they both fell around the same time frame. Do you remember what happened? Lots of people they scattered. A lot of people lost the faith. The question is, did they ever have it? But I don't want to go there and say, well, they just never had it. I think there are a lot of people who were believers, but they were looking at the man and not God. The sad thing is, and this is a reality, people are very physical, just like you and me. And we do tend to look at man. It's very hard for us to look past the man and see the cross behind him, if you would. Okay? I'm not perfect. That's the greatest struggle in my life, is being a shepherd, an under-shepherd, is people looking at me. And if I fall, if I say the wrong thing. I mean, I remember meeting with a guy once, and I mean, I got hot with him. I was just so sick and tired of his stupidity. And I told him so. I never had another day of ministry with him. I'm going to give an account for that. Does that make sense? I know that. But that individual was looking at me and not at God, and he couldn't deal with my stumble. Does it make sense? Even when I apologized, it didn't matter. I revealed that I was what? I was a human. I was a sinner. Now, I'm speaking of me, but do you realize there are people who are looking at you? George, you shared yesterday morning. I won't share what it was, okay? But an opportunity that you had once where you spouted off, and someone said, didn't think I saw Christians acted, huh? And I won't tell you what he did, but whoa, no, I'm just joking. Anyways, but I understood it because I've shared what happened to me at the one office, and I rode my boss up one side and down the other, and when I came out into the office, you could have heard a pin drop, you know? Why? Because that's not how Christians respond. That's not how they should act. And people know that. Does it make sense? And the sad thing is, when we do that, the people there weren't looking at me as a pastor. The people there were just looking at me as a believer who's working in an office. People are looking at you. You are a leader more than you realize that you are. And the weight of your testimony is huge. Is huge. What you say on Facebook, if you're on Facebook, is a huge testimony to who you are in your relationship with God and the God that you seek to serve or you claim to serve. And when you fall, I promise you, there are other people who fall with you. The weight of Saul, the consequences of his fall, are huge. Israel was scattered. They were a sheep without a shepherd. Not only did they demoralize, but the enemies of God, what? They exalted. They were jubilant. They were excited. This was a day of celebration. We've got one of the children of God, the leader of God's people, to fall. He fell. He died. Understand death. But it was the destruction of it. And this was a cause for celebration for the enemies of God. What do you think happens in the spiritual realm when Satan gets one of God's children to stumble and fall? Just as there's jubilation when a sinner turns to the Lord, I bet you there's a whole lot of jubilation in the camp of the devil when he causes one of us to go the other way. Did you ever think that went through? We think, ding, ding, all the angels dancing and everything else when sinners get saved. What do you think's going on in the enemy's camp? This is a war. This is a war, and it's for keeps. Satan knows he's doomed, and he's doing what? Seeking to take as many as he can with him. In the book of Revelation, the two names that are given to him are Abaddon and Apollyon. One's Hebrew, one's Greek. They both mean the same. Do you know what it means? Destroyer. Destroyer. He's the destroyer. He's on the mission. I mean, we have boats called destroyers. What are their missions? To destroy. We get it, right? What do you think Satan's mission is? To destroy. Who is he seeking to destroy? Well, Peter tells us that he's like a prowling lion, right? And he's doing what? Seeking whom he may devour, destroy. Do you think that that's just ordinary people? No, it's you and me. That's why Peter's telling us to be sober, to be vigilant. He's not telling the world to be sober and be vigilant. They're already in his camp. They don't know it, but they are. He wants to destroy us. And so when the enemy can destroy the children of God, the people of God, the leaders of God, there's a cause for celebration that goes on. They captured Israelite territory. They captured Israelite. When the people flee, what do you think the enemy did? They rushed in. When there is a void in godly leadership, what happens? Somebody will lead. Have we seen it in this country? Have we? Sad things, you see it in church too. And you see it everywhere else. When there is a void in godly leadership, somebody will lead. The enemy always rushes in to take the territory that has been lost. I want you to think about that. And then we have to what? Fight to reclaim it, to regain it. And so then we get the celebration. Note what they do. The celebration in their territory. This may be a little gory, but I want you to think of the symbolic nature of what happened here. In 1 Samuel 31, we read that they took the armor of Saul and they placed it in the temples of Asheroth. I want you to think spiritually, symbolically here. When the enemy destroys you, when the enemy comes in and he gets the victory over you, what are we told to do in the midst of that battle? To be strong in the Lord and in the power of his might, and to what? Put on the whole armor of God. And when you fail and you allow the enemy to bring in that fiery dart, he likes to, if you would, cut off your head, right? And then taunt the church with your armor, with your breastplate of righteousness, with your helmet of salvation, with your belt of truth. Oh, yeah, he was a real truthful guy. Look at this. What righteousness he had. Oh, this salvation stuff and this shield of, you know. And all of a sudden, what do we start hearing about the man who fell or the woman who fell? All of a sudden, that armor is started to be paraded out there as a what? As a trophy. It's a facade. It's a fake. It was all just hypocrisy going on. And they paraded out there like a trophy. And then the next thing is we read from 1 Chronicles chapter 10 that they took his head and they placed it in the temple of Dagon. Stuck it on a pole. Now, you could look at this two ways. A, it's Saul's head. And so they parade you in front of everybody too. But if you're a child of God, who ultimately is your head? Jesus Christ. And sadly, that's who gets paraded. They like to place his head, if you would, in the temple of their gods, thinking that they can claim victory over him. Does that make sense? Do they have the victory? No. Ultimately, the victory belongs to God. But when we stumble and when we fall, this is the key, this is the hope. For me, as I look through this, I have got to continually remember there's a battle beyond me. It's bigger than me. And when I lose, when I falter, when I fall, I'm giving the enemy an opportunity to glory over my God. To gloat over Jesus Christ. Now, I understand that's temporary. But it doesn't matter. If you know him and you love him, it shouldn't matter. You shouldn't want anybody to gloat over your own father. How much more so over your heavenly father? And so I ask you, with the choices that we make, there are consequences, not only in our lives, but also in the lives of those whom our lives come in contact. When your enemy falters, what is your reaction? Do you rejoice at the calamity of others? The things that you do are going to bring consequences. When they falter, do you rejoice? Are you concerned with what effect your actions cause in the spiritual realm? So when those decisions you make and they bring the consequences, do you care? Do you even care about what's going on beyond this moment? Again, these challenges are things that come at me, okay? And so some of these times I'm writing things down that this isn't just a fun little thing for you. This is a question for me, but I'm sharing in the wealth, okay? Are you giving the enemy indigestion or jubilation? Am I bringing consternation to the camp of Satan? Does he even care that I exist? Or are they excited? Are they exalting? Because they keep making a mockery of God because of Bob. You don't know my life. You don't know my thought life. You don't know the struggles. It's just like I don't know your struggles. And I understand that, you know, I may be 99% good. I'm not saying I am. But even if I am, that means what? There's 1% to work on. Does that make sense? Jesus said, be ye perfect, even as your Father in heaven is perfect. Peter said, be holy, even as God, the Lord, is holy. Paul said, I press toward the mark for the prize. I don't want to be content. And I want God to bring this to my mind, that when I stumble and I falter, and it may not be something I did, it may be just in my brain. I gave way to a thought process. That's spiritual realm stuff. God's getting glory, or Satan's getting glory because he caused me to go the wrong way. Maybe I'm focusing on a song, and you could debate all this you want, but But if it's a sin to you, it's a sin to you, right? And maybe it's focusing on songs that I don't need to be focusing on. And I start giving way to that stuff. I'm not giving way to God, I'm giving way to Satan. It's the little things that lead to the big things. Do you get it? I want to cause Satan so much consternation and indigestion that it, all the Pepto-Bismol, spiritual Pepto-Bismol in the world wouldn't help him. Okay? I mean, I do. I don't. But I do. I want us so bad to be winning, to seeing the fruit from this neighborhood and from this community. That's what God called us to do. When that starts happening, I promise you, I mean, there's already spiritual war going on. I know it. I see it at different times. But I don't want to get distracted because of the spiritual war. I want to get into that harvest field, and I want to see it happening. And I promise you, when it's happening, we're going to see a whole lot of indigestion coming from Satan at us. Does that make sense? Because there's a spiritual war going on. Is there an area of unfaithfulness in your life that needs to be confessed and let go? If it's an area bringing jubilation to the devil, then it needs to be confessed. You need to change the way you think. You need to repent of that, and you need to give it to God. So in the end then, the same question we're ending with all the time, is there a need to change the way you think, and then ultimately to change the way you act? Let's pray. Father, thank you for your goodness to us. We thank you for your word. It's quick, it's powerful, and it's sharper than a two-edged sword. Lord, I pray that you would help each of us to desire to live lives of faithfulness to you. Lord, that we would hear your word and we would heed it. We would see the things which are written for our learning and we would learn from them and that we would apply them to our lives, that you would receive the glory and the praise. Lord, I pray that as we go forth into this day and to this week, Lord, that we would make a commitment and prioritization of our time to spend it in your word and in your presence, that we may be conformed to you and not to the image of this world, that you would receive the glory in Christ's name. Amen.